The Drinking Hour on Food FM.
You're listening to The Drinking Hour with David Kermode in association with the International Wine and Spirit Competition, using the best in the world to judge the best in the world.
Hello and welcome to The Drinking Hour from Food FM. I'm David Kermode. This week, how a mythical sea creature has given birth to a distillery that's breaking boundaries when it comes to sustainability. It's on the Isle of Wight and it's called Mermaid, or the product is at least. We'll talk to one of its founders, plus later on some medal-winning gins from the IWSC Hall of Fame, and there are plenty.
The Drinking Hour on Food FM.
The Isle of Wight Distillery is yet to celebrate its first decade in business, yet it's already celebrated not just for the quality of its gin and vodka, but also for its work on sustainability, from sourcing to production, and notably to the bottle itself, which is completely free of plastic. More on that to come, in case you're wondering where on earth the plastic is in a glass bottle of spirit. All this has resulted in it recently, back in November, becoming a B Corporation. And if that is new to you, then we'll explain what that means too. It's a big deal. Mermaid Gin has been followed by sister iterations, a pink gin, a citrus zest one, and there's also a salt vodka too. All the products share a remarkable list of locally sourced ingredients, including that citrus, believe it or not, in this country. Xavier Baker is one of its co-founders, and he joins us from the island now. Xavier, welcome to The Drinking Hour.
Thank you, David. Great to be here.
It's great to have you. And I'm a bit biased here, I suppose, because I grew up on the Isle of Wight and I got terribly excited when I realised there was a distillery at last. And because when I was growing up, I think Burt's Beer was about the only thing that was boozy that was made on the Isle of Wight.
Yeah, but that's right. Yeah.
Yeah. Inventor, I think. Yeah. But yeah. It's the Isle of Wight distillery created, well, less than a decade ago. Tell us about the distillery and about the creation of Mermaid Gin.
Thanks, David. So it's nice to mention the old Burt's Brewery there, because that was where I started off in the brewing trade.
Oh.
So I was at the old Burt's, which was later became Ventnor Brewery, but I was there for 15 years as a trainee brewer, and then, as a full brewer there. So happy days.
Oh.
But, the Mermaid Gin, Isle of Wight Distillery. So myself and Conrad Gauntlet. Conrad is a winemaker here on the Isle of Wight of 35 years at Rosemary Vineyard. Myself, a brewer since the age of 17. Been good friends for years and years, always talking about bottling, fermentation and filtration, all those sort of things. And we said it'd be great to get a distillery underway, make some gin, maybe some whiskey. And then in 2014, we set the company up. 2015, 1st of August, we sold our first bottle of Mermaid Gin. And ever since then, it's been a warp speed rollercoaster ride, really, of good fun and, really good.
Yeah, but I tell you what, the gin world, it's a crowded market. There are a lot of gins. The gin boom is well known. And you don't just kind of launch a gin. You've got to really have a good idea about what you're going to do and what your USP is going to be and all of that kind of thing. So how did you go about creating something like Mermaid? Because it's really good. It's very special.
Oh, thank you. So I suppose coming from the brewing background, you try and get that vision in your head of what you want your end product to taste, look, smell, aroma, strength, everything else. And with the Mermaid, we wanted to be smooth, easy drinking, one that would be of an evening, handful of gin and tonics, but equally stand up well in a martini. Also bringing in a bit of a local element as well. And that's where our rock samphire comes in, which we wild forage on the south side of the island, not far from Ventnor, as you mentioned. And the rock samphire is what gives our gin that sort of hint of sea air. Its nickname is Mermaid's Kiss, which is a nice little story, really, where the rock samphire grows underneath the cliffs just above the high tide line. It was back in the day where all the sailors and fishermen, if they were shipwrecked, they would swim ashore, clamber over the rocks, wait till they found the rock samphire, and they knew they were above high tide, so they were safe to relax and wait to be rescued. So like when you're kissed by a mermaid, you're safe from drowning. So it's quite nice. So Mermaid's Kiss is the local nickname for the rock samphire, so which is our sort of key botanical, along with lemon zest, which gives a vibrant citrusy note into the gin. We also use Grains of Paradise, which gives that sort of smooth peppery note in the gin as well. And as a garnish, we'd recommend cucumber. We find that's quite a nice, refreshing, savoury middle ground between the rock samphire and the lemon zest, with a whole host of other botanicals that we use as well.
Yeah, and the rock samphire is a great idea and brings you that connection to the sea, which is everywhere you go on the Isle of Wight. You can pretty much see the sea, and it's a really good bit of local sourcing. But going through your ingredients list, I was really struck. As I say, I grew up on the island, but there were loads of things I had no idea you could get on the Isle of Wight, including citrus.
True. So we launched in the summer of 22 the Mermaid Zest, which is grapefruit led. We're also using bergamots and lemons grown here on the island at Osborne House in Queen Victoria's old Victorian walled garden, where there's one lemon tree and one bergamot tree. And talking to the gardeners, mm-hmm. up at Osborne House, they were delighted to work with us to make good use of the fruits. So, and the lemons, they're huge, juicy lemons. So, really great to use them in the zest gin. Really good.
It's bizarre because the Isle of Wight has a microclimate, and the Arrowton Valley, where some of your other ingredients are from, we'll come to the strawberries in a minute. But, it is famously fertile and has this amazing microclimate. And Ventnor, we were mentioning just now, is protected from the north, basically, and again has this microclimate. And I know some of your ingredients come from the botanical gardens there. But let's go back to that citrus, because that's up in East Cowes, and that's sort of that's facing north, and yet they're able to grow lemons and grapefruit and bergamot and so forth. How can they possibly do that? Are we talking glass houses here?
No, they're on the north of the red brick wall, facing south.
Right.
And that the gardeners put fleeces over them from the end of September through to April. Talking to the gardeners, that we actually have two harvests here on the island, which is very, very unusual. So in the Mediterranean, they will be harvesting end of August, September. But over here, the fruits that haven't ripened off, they're protected by the fleece on the tree. When the fleece is taken down in early spring or mid-spring, the heat from the spring allows them to ripen off. So it's quite bizarre. We have two harvests. So it gives us a good chance to make a good few batches of distillate for the zest gin. So harvest September, then the second one in April.
So you've got the citrus from Osborne House, we've mentioned the rock samphire from the coast, from the sea shore by Ventnor. Now the botanic gardens, what are you getting there?
So Boadicea hops. So they have a hop garden which is literally right on the cliff edge. It's the closest hops grown in the country to the sea. You can throw a stone from the hop garden and the stone will land in the sea. It's that close. So they're Boadicea hops, and they work very well with our Angelica roots in the gin. They're like spicy, earthy character. Beautiful hops. Again, like you say, with the microclimate in Ventnor, it's just ideal. And being a brewer at heart, it's just nice to have a small amount of hops in our gin as well.
Mm, what do they add, just out of interest? Because I wouldn't necessarily expect to find a hop in a gin. I don't know whether that's just because I don't know enough about gin. But what's that bringing to the party?
The characteristics of the Boadicea hops is it's like spicy and slightly earthy. And so with the Angelica root, those two just work hand in hand. So, they pair off well together. And I say it's just a little nod to the brewing side of things as well.
Yeah. And of course, it's not a gin without juniper. You can't be getting juniper on the Isle of Wight for sure.
Well, there are seven juniper bushes on the island. The trouble is, if we were to harvest any of those berries, the locals would know exactly where they've gone. So we best leave those alone. The botanical gardens, again, they are growing some juniper, some berries, but they haven't had a harvest yet. And there's only a handful of trees there or bushes there. So commercially, it wouldn't really be able for us to use. So we sourced them from Macedonia.
And is there a kind of a care going into the sourcing there? I can't imagine, given the lengths you go to get ingredients, I can't imagine that you just buy any old juniper.
No, that's true, David. Yeah, so we work with father and son team or company, Beacon Commodities, and we've worked with them from day one. They are a great couple of chaps, and they spend a lot of time and effort traveling all around the world, meeting the farmers of all sorts of botanicals, just to make sure, A, the quality's there, they're fairly traded, ethically sourced. So they do a lot of the hard work for us and give us the guarantees that they're good quality and from a good source as well.
I promised I'd mention the pink gin as well. And when I tasted this, I did so with a degree of trepidation because I'm quite old-fashioned in my gin tastes. I like it to be juniper-led. I like good citrus. It's why I like the original Mermaid gin so much. But actually, and pink gin can sometimes be a little bit sweet for me, but you've managed to avoid any kind of sort of cloying sweetness with the pink gin. Again, I'm assuming that's entirely deliberate. It's a style thing.
It is. And it was a difficult one to try and get the sweetness level right because a little bit of sweetness from the strawberries. There's the natural sugars in the strawberries, but without going too sweet. So we're trying to sort of keep the disconcerting gin drinker happy, but also for people that might like something sweeter, it's a stepping stone for them into the gin world as well. So the strawberries come from Arrowton Valley, from Ben Brown, who's a local farmer and good friend. And they're the ugly, wonky strawberries that aren't beautiful enough to go into strawberries and cream. So we get them from him, and he charges us for them. Being a farmer, no chance of us getting them free. and so we infuse those in our Mermaid original. Split the batch, redistill it, and then add them back together. So that's how we get the pink, real sort of vibrant, sort of fruity notes in there, a slight bit of pink hue, and then we also have the natural sugars remaining in there as well from the strawberries.
Yeah, it's a really good drink, actually. I was very, very impressed. And all this local sourcing, this plays into your kind of sustainability story. You've just been, in the last couple of months, made a B Corp. Now, B Corp is still a relatively new thing. I wasn't even sure myself what it was until a year or so ago. So just explain what B Corp status means.
Yeah, thank you, David. Yeah, so that's something we're hugely proud about. It's something we've been wanting to be accredited for a good few years. The process has taken us just over 2 years to actually gain the accreditation. And it shows, as a company, how we operate. And every decision we make through the company, there's a consideration to the impact on the environment. And we're, again, fortunate we've got absolute dream team here at the distillery. Everybody's like-minded, conscientious of the environment and our impact, but also how you operate to your local community, whether it be customers or just people in the local community. So we do certain local charity things to support underprivileged. Also with Hampshire and Isle Wildlife Trust, Surface Against Sewage, helping to monitor the seagrass meadows here just off the island in the Solent. So we're fortunate we have the longest seagrass meadow in Europe from Osborne Bay to Benbridge Ledge just off of us here. So to help, we get down there in the welly boots, help from the monitoring, collecting the seeds, planting the seeds. So yeah, it's good fun to get involved in that generally for the right reasons, being surrounded by sea on the island. But also with B Corp, it's also how you work with your customers, and it's just not all about profit, really. It's about putting something back into people and the planet as well.
Why did you want this status, this B Corp status?
Personally, it's something I'm hugely passionate about, and I think it's something that we need to rely on businesses to make the changes. Without getting too political, I think it's over to the businesses to really, we're the ones that can help make those decisions and do the right thing, using your business as a force for good.
Yeah, and you can't just apply for B Corp status, can you? You've got to earn it. You get presumably inspected and so forth.
Yeah, we do. It is very rigorous and quite rightly so. So a lot of things we were doing already anyway, but we didn't have them put in the right formats. And we've had to, again, work with all of our suppliers as well, and understand what their sustainable goals are on the horizon to be more sustainable, trying to achieve net zero down the line. And some of them are well and truly on that road, and other companies that, so oblivious is a bit harsh, but they're really like, there's not really on our agenda, but working with them, to like how can they start to work on those goals already? So it's just everybody working together. And I think also being transparent with each other as well. You know, we've made some great innovations with our tamper-proof seal on the bottle, which is made from potato and cornstarch, working with Viscose to develop that compostable tamper-proof seal. And again, you know, we're keen to share that with other distilleries. Yeah, all work together for the right reasons.
Well, the bottle is definitely worth talking about. It looks great. We'll come to the look in a second, but let's keep on the sustainable path for now, because you are offering a genuinely 100% plastic-free bottle. And people might think, well, I don't get plastic on a glass bottle anyway, but that's not strictly true, is it, when it comes to things like seals and labels and that sort of stuff?
That's it, yeah. There's so many parts of it with the glues, the inks, the adhesives, everything. So we spent a lot of time working with the suppliers to make sure they are, whether it be compostable or sustainable. It is hard to achieve plastic-free, and we were very proud to be the first plastic-free spirits bottle accredited out on the market. And also winning awards with the IWSC for best bottle design. And it was really nice to hear a comment from one of the judges saying their compromise was made, you know, with sustainability in mind as well.
Yeah, and that's just it, because it just looks great. So sometimes, you know, when something is sustainably made, you have to accept there's a compromise. It might be a physical compromise, but there is no compromising, I don't think, with your bottle. For those who haven't seen it, just explain, you know, try and paint a picture, what it looks like and what inspired the bottle design.
Yeah, so a mermaid bottle is wrapped in mermaid scales, so it's a very tactile bottle to feel. We've taken all sorts into consideration, so it's bartender friendly, balance formulas, swing formulas. The colour of the glass is a marine turquoise to represent a beautiful sea here off the Isle of Wight. Might be pushing the colour of the Isle of Wight, but certainly the Mediterranean. Mm-hmm. And we wanted it to be something of beauty, that people wouldn't want to just throw in recycling. People would want to keep, reuse, make it into a vase, candle holder, or people are chopping them in half and making things out of them, which for us is exactly what we wanted to achieve from the outset. And it's nice to, a report was put out last year, it wasn't by eBay, but it was about eBay, that our mermaid bottles are the highest value empty selling bottles on eBay, which is great. And hearing stories from pubs around the country, they're selling the empty bottles for £5, and the £5 is going in the local charity pot, and how much they've raised for each local charity is, it's great to hear. And that's what we want.
Oh, that's lovely. It's really good to hear. I had no idea there was a kind of secondary market in your bottles. That's pretty incredible.
Yeah, it's crazy.
They do look great. Yeah, they look really great. And it also speaks to a kind of premium price point. And you're definitely at a reasonably premium price point too. When you're creating a gin, how important is it to get that kind of section of the market really clear, really right in the first place, your price point?
Price point, it is difficult, and, you know, challenging times now and things, but the cost of time and effort, the bottle, the sourcing of the best quality ingredients we can get, it does come to that price. So hopefully, you know, people will have a bit of confidence when they buy a bottle of mermaid gin. They're contributing positively to people and the planet, that, you know, it is a good investment, and the liquid tastes great. And if you want to pop your empty bottle on eBay, you can.
Yeah, I think I'll have mine with something in it, to be honest, but that's just me. You've done really well. I was looking through the medals you've won. So the IWSC, sponsors of this program, 97 points for the mermaid gin, the regular gin in 2021, 95 for the vodka, which we've not mentioned yet. We'll talk about that in a sec. You've got a gold for that pink gin we were talking about just now, this year at the IWSC. You're doing really well. It's fair to say the products have been very well received, isn't it?
Yeah, we were really, really pleased. I mean, there's a lot of gins out in the market. So to have one that can shine through, something we're all hugely proud of, you know, and all the distillers, everybody spends so much time and effort making sure the liquid, the gin is, you know, consistent each time. Every time you have a Mermaid gin and tonic, it's the same as you remember the last one, not, you know, different batch by batch. You know, we do operate small batches, but every bottling run or every bottle is signed off by the three distillers. Well, three distillers have the taste test, yet happy before it goes to bottle.
And to what extent, when you're developing a product like this, do you have to think about the pairing, to think about the tonic? Because, you know, most people don't drink neat gin, but they do drink it in a cocktail, undiluted, or perhaps mixed with something else. Most people, though, I would say, are probably having it with tonic. So how do you factor in that when you're creating this product?
To be honest, I don't think we're in creation factoring in the tonic to go with it. It's just making sure, which we probably should, but making sure that the liquid is what we wanted to achieve. And then once we're happy with the liquid, let's try and find the right tonic to pair with our final product. I'm fortunate now there's some fantastic tonics out there. Fevertree have been fantastic with us from day one. You've got Franklin's, Double Dutch, all with different variants and types. So it's, depending what you like, there's so many variations and combinations to try.
Yeah, there is. And not all gins are as good as others with tonic, but yours definitely sits really comfortably with a good tonic. The brands you've just mentioned, you know, would be my Fevertree. Naturally Light is probably my preferred option.
But that's just a slice of cucumber.
Happy yeah, day. Delicious, really nice, delicious. And of course, you could grow the cucumbers on the Isle of Wight for sure. That's definitely got the climate.
And also afterwards, they go lovely in the cheese and cucumber sandwich.
Yeah, indeed. Yeah. And the Isle of Wight, for those who don't know the island well, I grew up there, you grew up there. Yeah. It has transformed, frankly, since I moved away. It's got the most amazing kind of local sourcing kind of food culture. There are, I'm a big fan of New Zealand for that. And there's a little nod to that New Zealand sort of food culture, I think, on the island these days. Would you agree?
Yeah, very much so. We're very fortunate. As you mentioned, you know, we're lucky to have the microclimate here on the island as well, which helps us with fantastic produce. So we've got the tomatoes that the island's famous for. We've got the Isle of Wight garlic, various different types of garlic and sauces and chutneys, and the garlic farm. They offer a fantastic a place to go have some lunch, that's for sure. We've got Isle of Wight cheeses. We've got some great beers from Goddard's Brewery here on the island. Pretty good gins.
Yes, you have.
But also we've got some of the outlets. There's some great chefs on the island. We're very fortunate to have fantastic seafood around as well. Some great pubs and little coves. So there's some great places to go and eat and enjoy the local produce as well.
Yeah, and you've got a lot of support from local hospitality as well. You see Mermaid Gin behind pretty much every bar, I would say.
Yeah, the Isle of Wight has been really supportive of us from day one, you know, which is absolutely brilliant. Yeah, it's been really overwhelming and to help us get us to where we are today.
Yeah, and you seem to be innovating a lot. I promised I'd mention the vodka. That's been around a little while. It's a salt vodka, is that right?
Correct, yeah. Yeah, so the Mermaid Salt Vodka, yeah. So the idea of that when came to be in the early days when I was trying to pull the formula together for the Mermaid gin. And I was using a standard gin, steeping and macerating certain botanicals, trying them all individually to get a true understanding of each botanical, each addition. And I added some white sea salt and then tasted it. And the gin, the standard I was using at the time, just went super smooth. I said, well, that's really interesting. Anyway, then carried on with rock samphire and the rest of botanicals for mermaid gin. And then thought, right, well, let's bring a vodka out. And then, you know, vodka is all about being smooth and trying to tie in with the mermaid theme, Isle of Wight, local, coastal, the sea salt. So added a small amount of sea salt just before bottling. And with the vodka, it just gives an absolute sort of smooth, savoury note on the palate, which sets you up for so many cocktails. And when we go into the bars in London, talk to the mixologists, they all appreciate and enjoy the gins, but they're the vodka. That's what I've been waiting for. I'm just working on a cocktail. I need this savoury note in here. And it works with so many things. And it's a great, great vodka.
Yeah. And it's worth coming along to taste some of these things. You're, as I understand it, I've not been. I know exactly where you are because you're at the Wishing Well, a pub I used to go to. Well, I probably did some of my early age underage drinking there, I suspect. Not that I would encourage that. It's irresponsible and all the rest of it. But it's but you're I think in quite a small location, but you can come along and taste and buy there and look, I think, through a glass screen at the distillery too. That's right, isn't it?
Very much so, yeah. So as I say, we're in the old Wishing Well pub, which Susie mentioned that to anybody. Everybody's got stories from back in the day, being down here in the old folk scene and years ago and all sorts. So, but it's very much, it's quite a casual approach. Everyone's welcome. Can come in. We've got local beer. You can come over tea, a coffee, cocktail, gin and tonic. You can see that all the stills in action behind the glass. We've got some tasting panels, tasting boards, and there's a little shop in the corner as well. So, yeah, please, anybody's come to the island, yeah, more than welcome. Pop in, come and say hello.
Yeah, it sounds great. Really good idea. What's next then? Because you seem to be restless sort of developers of new things. Have you got other products in the pipeline at the distillery?
Maybe. We are working on a couple of new products, which, all being well, should be released in the spring next year. But yeah, David, I might have to give it a heads up off air on that one for the moment.
Okay. All right. Well, just tease us. That's fine. I had a feeling there'd be something else in the pipeline. Where did you learn your distilling skills? Because you mentioned Burt's Brewery, Ventnor Brewery. You mentioned your background as a brewer, but where did you pick up this knowledge of distillation?
So I went to Ireland brewing to set a brewery up in Ireland. I was employed to set a brewery up from scratch. And during my time in Ireland, met some whiskey distillers over there. I then just really got into the distilling side of things. I understand they were very helpful and supportive. Met a couple of Pachin distillers in Ireland as well, the best Pachin distillers in the County Kerry, which they were a couple of interesting chaps, and there's more stories on them down the line. But after in time with the whiskey distillers in Ireland, then went to Scotland with the Institute of Brewers and Distillers, did a course up there. Then came back to the island, and to be honest, it's been learning curves, really. And over the previous 7 years, made plenty of learning curves. Conrad's very much into distilling as well, and we've got the distilling team that, they're beyond us now on their knowledge of distilling. They're very fortunate to have a great team.
Yeah, well, it's great for the island too to have you doing that. It's just another great Isle of Wight product, frankly. So that's really good news. So congratulations on that, and on the award success that you've enjoyed, both on the design side, but most importantly, you know, the quality of what's in the bottles. Just before you go, I have you're obviously a sort of glutton for punishment, because I also read, I think on your website or elsewhere, that you're also going to row across the Atlantic for charity. Is that next year or the year after?
That's true. Yes. So 2023. So, we're taking part in the Atlantic Campaign's Atlantic Row. So myself, Paul Berry, who's ex-Royal Navy and a longshoreman from Ventnor, and Manny, Chris Mannion, he owns iSurf, surf school here on the island. A 3,000-mile row from La Gomera in the Canaries across to Antigua. So, please do, if it's interesting to follow our journey, keep a lookout for Mermaid Atlantic.
And you're raising money for charity doing this as well. This isn't just for fun.
We are. So part of it is to raise money and awareness for the Seahorse Trust down in Studland Bay. And just, again, trying to protect the seagrass meadows down there, which is a vital habitat and breeding ground for the seahorses. Surfers Against Sewage, that if anybody's not aware of them, a lobbying body that, given the government a hard time on how the water companies are just putting neat effluent into our rivers and water systems, where we all like to go for a swim, surf, paddleboard and things. And the Hampshire Isle of Wight Wildlife Trust, which have all sorts of projects, but one of them is the seagrass here in the Solent as well. So just trying to raise awareness for the marine conservation and preservation of the seagrass.
Well, wish you the best of luck with that. It's an incredible challenge. And as you say, the people, the charities, the groups that you're supporting are very much in touch with the current zeitgeist, I think. So well done for that. Most importantly, well done for just making a really delicious sort of suite of of drinks. Mermaid Gin continues to sort of impress people. I put it in front of, and as I say, it's enjoyed those medals too. So many congratulations. Look forward to hearing about what's next. I won't try and tease anything else out of you yet, but do come back. And in the meantime, Xavier, thanks ever so much for talking to us here on The Drinking Hour.
Thank you, David. And do come over and come and see us.
Will do.
Thank you.
The Drinking Hour on Food FM.
You're listening to The Drinking Hour with David Kermode in association with the International Wine and Spirit Competition, using the best in the world to judge the best in the world.
Right, let's round off with a celebration of medal winners from the IWSC in 2022. We're talking gin this time for obvious reasons. And let's start with a result that we alluded to a little earlier, a gold medal for the Isle of Wight distillery. Mermaid Pink Gin won 95 points. The judges, including self-confessed gin nerd Olivier Ward, a previous guest here on The Drinking Hour and a member of the IWSC Spirits Judging Committee. What he doesn't know about gin isn't really worth knowing. Here's what they had to say. Beautiful shade of pink, bright citrus zest to the nose with bags of strawberry aromas paired with mint and juniper, sweetness on the front and a welcome dry note on the finish. Makes you go back for more and more, they said. And I would personally echo that. It really isn't too sweet, which is really great for a pink gin. Next, a trophy winner representing Best in Show, a gold medal winner with 98 points. Opir Aromatic Bitters Gin. The judges, including Joel Harrison, a regular here on The Drinking Hour, said this. Lovely light lemon notes, slightly floral with coriander, herbs and pepper aromas shining through on the nose. Well-balanced palate with cardamom, a soft butteriness and pepper, combining with the citrus notes, creating a well-integrated and well-made, interesting gin. Here's one that won a gold as well, also with 98 points too, and it also got a gold in the gin and tonic category, a separate category, because obviously we don't generally drink gin neat, so they've created a G&T category as well. Seppeltsfield Road Distillers Musician's Cut Gin, the judging panel's tasting note, punchy pine on the nose with beautiful, vibrant citrus, complex aromas of grapefruit peel, sherbet and delicate florals add to the flavour profile. Spices arrive on the palate and grip the taste buds along with rich spice. And in that specific gin and tonic category I mentioned, here's a gin that's new to me, actually. It was a trophy winner in the G&T category, so Best in Show. I'd also won a gold medal in that category, fairly obviously, because you wouldn't be in the trophy category if you didn't get a gold. Vanaganda Distilleries London Dry Gin. It won 98 points. It's a beautiful looking London Dry Gin. And this one comes from Galicia in northwest Spain. Finally, a gold medal winner also in the G&T category that won a silver medal when judged as a gin on its own. Trading Tides Gin, this one from Third Eye Distillery in Goa in India. The judges said the elegance of Angelica root aromas lead onto a warming palate and pleasing mouthfeel. Citrus notes balance well with spices that linger enjoyably. Well balanced and also great length to those flavours. Well done to all those medal winners, and thank you to Xavier Baker from the Isle of Wight Distillery. If you've yet to discover those mermaid gins or the vodka, then I would highly recommend them. Maybe I'm biased because I'm from the Isle of Wight, but I do genuinely think they're really great. Thanks to him. That's it for another edition of The Drinking Hour. You can follow us at Food FM Radio on Instagram or Twitter. I'm Mr. Venusaurus on Instagram and Twitter. If you like what you hear, then do please rate us on your platform. If you are asked to do that and give us a positive rating, it all helps. And even if you don't, thank you for listening, and we'll talk to you next time. Goodbye.
The Drinking Hour on Food FM.
You're listening to The Drinking Hour with David Kermode in association with the International Wine and Spirit Competition, using the best in the world to judge the best in the world.